Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Area 51.
Hey guys, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you guys like the last two episodes featuring Atul and Anuj. We got a lot of positive feedback. It was pretty positive, actually. I mean, it was very heartwarming to see folks actually reach out and ask how they can be more active in advocacy, because, you know, Anuj and Atul have been like out there.
I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, so to give some idea for our subscribers, we started an online petition that sends out letters to Congress and the president to make movement on two of the bills that are related to the whole backlog movement. And we've got, what, Rahul, 1,000+ people who...
1,000+.
That's pretty crazy, right? Like, honestly, I don't think you and I expected such a large crowd to...
I was happy with 100. Every 100 on top of that, I was like, oh my God, this is the best day ever. And just to let you guys know what the impact is, every person that actually signs that petition, which actually takes a few minutes on your phone, a letter goes out to the president. It goes out to your state representatives as well. So you can imagine 1,000 people plus signed up means that's the number of letters that have gone out to all these people. And you can imagine the impact it would have created in trying to educate folks on, you know, immigration backlogs or other immigration problems that people here face. So thanks to everyone who signed up for it. And it's still live. You can go to our website. The link pops up. And if you can spare a few minutes, please sign up and do your bit.
Speaking of that, like, we all talk about advocacy, but let's say you're stuck in a situation and not everybody can afford a fancy immigration lawyer. But then what if there's actually a way with, you know, we've seen in movies, like, you fight your own case, right? Like, you see Tom Cruise or, you know, Jack, I don't know. I keep going back to A Few Good Men. That's one of my favorite law-related movies. And you see folks who fight for themselves. And today's guest who we have is actually... built a product that does something along those lines. So I want to welcome John to our podcast. Hey, John, welcome to Area 51.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, John, thanks for coming, man. We've heard about your tool. It's been making waves, and we're really excited to actually have you walk us through it and kind of give us a sneak peek into how it works. So,
of course,
welcome to Area 51.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really, it's hard coming after on the heels of Atul and Anuj. Like, those guys are out there doing such incredible work. And I'm just like in awe of what they've done and been able to accomplish. And so it's a little bit daunting to come after them, but I appreciate you having me. I'm really happy to be here.
You've built out something pretty cool with ProSay Pro as well.
Yeah.
And folks, that's the name of the service. It's a web-based product. And what it does, like, John, I'm going to probably let you talk about a little bit more deal, but just to give a high level context, is the idea is, so technically in the US legal system, you are allowed to represent yourself without having a lawyer in court. Although most folks, you know, would recommend, well, that's a really bad idea. There are actually a few caveats where it might actually make pretty good sense to represent yourself in court cases. And John's built a product that uses this particular quirk that is specific to immigration law. And John, you know, if you can expand on that a little bit, like, I don't know if that provided a lot of clarity, but obviously you do a better job.
Here's a fun fact before John starts. It's pro se in Latin actually means in one's own behalf, right? It's an actual part of law where you can actually represent yourself. So...
right.
Now I'm going to let John speak. I just want to give you like, I just wanted to say, I was very fascinated by like when I heard the name of the tool before we spoke to John. And it's pretty cool that he actually built it on top of that Latin phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's taken from the legal system. It's the official term that you are filing pro se on your own behalf without a lawyer. And we think it's pretty cool as well. Thank you for the description. And yeah, you're pretty spot on. We have a tool that kind of sits on the overlap of technology and online courses, where we're providing a host of tools to give everybody who works with us everything they need to be able to file those cases on their own without an attorney, which, yes, is terrifying if you don't have the context or the understanding of how the system works, which is why there are so few pro se cases filed, you know, against the government, because it's like, how am I, somebody who doesn't know, particularly in immigration, not only am I not a lawyer, I'm also in a foreign country where the systems might be a lot different than what I'm accustomed to, and I'm going against the government. It's the freaking government. So yeah, it is daunting, and it is probably, you know, when we talk to people, that's the biggest question we get is like, how can someone like me take on the government?
Yeah, because it's pretty much life or death in a way, right? Because one wrong move or one wrong ruling means your entire future's done, right? I can totally understand the fear or the reluctance that folks, you know, would have in trying to appear on their own behalf. So
yeah, but I don't know if you want me to jump into like what we've seen since we started and the incredible results that I wouldn't even say that we've achieved, that ultimately the customers who have worked with us, that they've achieved, because they're doing it pro se, they're doing it on their own behalf.
Before we get into that, John, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you reached this point where you're like, I want to do something like this? Because if I remember correctly, you had told me briefly when we spoke last time that your background is not in immigration law. So it's pretty fascinating that you ended up creating such a cool tool. So if you can walk us through that, that'd be great.
Yeah, of course. And actually, thank you for that say. I should always start anytime I talk to anybody. I almost always is programmed into me to say, I am not a lawyer and I'm not giving legal advice because I'm not qualified to give legal advice. And Pro Se Pro doesn't give legal advice. We provide a whole set of tools. So yeah, I'm not a lawyer. I don't have an official formal background in immigration. What I do have is, I kind of just give a brief, here's the circuitous route of my career. Coming right out of college, I went to work with a nonprofit in Latin America and spent 3 years overseas as a foreigner. And I gained a really deep appreciation for what it's like to live in a foreign land, as you might imagine. And you know, obviously, a lot of your listeners have been here for longer than 3 years, but that was a long enough time where I'm like, I have a different perspective on immigration, I think, than a lot of Americans who have never left. And obviously, that's influenced the perception I've had.
That's very true. You raise a really good point, because I think one of the big caveats of the U.S. immigration system is a lot of folks probably like, you know, citizens or permanent residents who've not been through the immigration system don't have an understanding of how complicated it is. And, you know, you bring up a great point there.
I mean, that's for everyone though, right? I mean, unless you dive into it from the deep end, you really don't have that appreciation or that understanding that, hey, something as complex as this exists.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool that I really like the line that you said where, because you actually experienced what it was to live in another country, you have like an appreciation for it. I don't know. It just, that kind of struck home.
Yeah. I mean, it can't help but shape you, right? And it impacts the way I think about policy and the way mostly the way I think about individuals and the way I treat individuals the way that I wanted to be treated.
When I hear people say travel is underrated, you know, I'm like, nah, there's nothing like that. People will be like, you know, you need to travel to see the world and, you know, explore different cultures to get like a different perspective. And I would think that's like, it really doesn't make such a difference, right? But now, like after all these years and traveling and living in different places, I have like a healthy appreciation for like immersing yourself in different cultures. Just makes you more open.
Absolutely. Makes you appreciate different things. I feel like the way I can appreciate things with a greater depth.
So when you did work in Latin America for a few years, were you working somewhere along, you know, immigration or policy or like what? It's a completely different thing. And so how did Pro Se Pro come about? Like, it's not a niche that folks nowadays, we talk, hey, maybe you should start a drop shipping label on Amazon or like, that's the thing. Yeah. John's like, you know what? I'll go find this really weird niche of immigration law.
I was going to say something funny, but I don't have anything funny to say, so I'll just tell the truth. Something funny to come out. You know, I came back from being overseas, and ultimately I had a very entrepreneurial spirit and started building companies and or working for different tech companies. So I worked in a few different industries. I was in HR tech. I was in education tech. I was in health and well-being. And it kind of always definitely had to be doing something where I felt like I was helping people and making a difference in people's lives. None of those led me directly to immigration. And my path to immigration actually starts with one of my other partners, who's my legal advisor. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners might know this name, Brad Banas, because of the work that he's done for unreasonable delay cases.
Yep.
I know Brad from college days. We were roommates back in college. And so
really? Nice. Uh-huh. Brad's a legend in the immigration community, along with Steve and Jonathan.
he's a legend around these parts for different reasons, but I think you want to keep the rating as a
okay, it's PG-13.
Yeah, but no, the story of Pro Se Pro, Brad is a critical part of the story. And I've gotten to watch his career because, you know, we've been very, very close friends since he graduated from college and went to law school, worked as a clerk for a judge, worked on behalf of the Department of Justice defending the USCIS, defending the Immigration Services, then switching to private practice, and then fighting on behalf of immigrants. I've gotten to see it all. And the story of Pro Se Pro really begins with conversations that he and I had with our other founder. There's three of us that have started this organization. And the conversations we had were really about what Brad saw and what he hoped to achieve with his legal career. And really, when Brad went from working for the government going to private, what he wanted to do was create systemic change. You know, he saw from the inside what was happening, and he hoped as an internal lawyer that he could be an advocate for change and make waves there and help improve the legal system on behalf of immigration from within. He ultimately decided, I think I can do more good from without, which is what he's been doing. Again, that's why he's legendary, I would say, in this sector, because of the precedent that he's set with a lot of the cases that he's won.
Yep. Yeah, he's actually slated to come on one of our future episodes. He's okay. The one who he actually connected us to you, and I'm so glad he did.
Yeah.
We've been waiting to get him back. We've just had some scheduling stuff. So before too long, he's going to be on the show, guys. So
yeah, do some spacing in between him and me. He's much more charming. He's a litigation attorney. So he's like, okay. He's so good on his feet. I don't have those skills. So yeah, put some space in between us. But all your guests are so good. So that's all right. Hopefully this resonates with a few folks. But yeah, so Brad wanted to make this change. And he was, you know, he was having great success with his cases. There were kind of two things that stood out that in the conversations we had about, you know, what was going on. One is he's like, I can reach more people if they didn't need me, I could help more people. The other was he saw a lot of lawyers that hadn't really done the work, but they saw the precedent being set and they were celebrating these wins. And he saw them on social media. They're like, look at how many wins I've gotten. And he's like, they were saying, you know, I've settled 499 out of 500 cases. Look at how great I am. He's like, that doesn't mean you're great. That just means that the case is a slam dunk.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you as the lawyer are unnecessary in a lot of cases. And so it's not all the time. You know, obviously he's an immigration attorney. He's not going to say you don't ever need an attorney. What he did say was there are times when, first of all, we know litigation works to resolve unreasonable delays.
Yeah.
Those precedents have been set. We know there's certain cases that have incredibly high settlement rates because it's not worth it for the government to fight them. And so kind of what we devised between Brad and my other partner, myself, my other partner, Andrew, you can see him on our website. He's a fantastic person as well. He and I are kind of the technology and business brains behind it, whereas Brad is the legal strategy. In our discussions, we're like, you know, we can basically take the knowledge that Brad has of the legal system, turn it into a course, and give people the documentation and the process and guidance that they need to file these suits on their own without a lawyer.
Damn, that's brilliant.
So it's not like you figured out some forms that you read somewhere on the internet and then you're making some money off of it. That's not what Pro Se Pros. You actually have a lawyer. I'm just joking, yeah. By the way. Like,
yeah.
There's actually pretty cool things that they've built.
That's actually brilliant. I mean, you've just made it accessible to so many people. I mean, now they don't have to worry about if an attorney is available, who do they reach out to, and a lot of other variables like that.
I feel they've figured out a way to like automate their own jobs through this process, right? Like that's what you're doing.
I was
going to
ask, I mean, is the legal community happy with you guys? Because you've essentially grabbed a good percentage of their clients or cases, yeah. Right? This is what like an actual attorney would be doing. You've just automated the whole process and you've just taken it away from them. So how accepting have they been of you guys?
I love this question.
Yeah, you got to like the Napster of the immigration community.
Napster, you're going way back there. I kid you not. I made a reference to Napster 2 days ago and I was joking.
Are you serious?
Twice in 1 week. That is unheard of in 2024. So it's funny and I love this question. We see basically two different responses and I don't know that it's split 50-50, but some lawyers, yes, they're very threatened. Maybe there's three reactions. There's lawyers that are like, we're threatened. You're taking our work away and we don't like you.
Okay.
There's lawyers who really don't understand litigation, because there's a lot of immigration attorneys that they're petition attorneys. They don't know litigation, and that's okay. That's not their specialty, but
sure.
They're scared of litigation, period. So they're even more scared of it if it's pro se. And so they're like, they tell their clients, stay away, just wait. Yeah, I know that your friend got their approval in 3 weeks. You just wait for 5 years and you'll be fine. So that's version number two. Version number three, what I would say are I'm biased, but I'm going to say these are the really great lawyers. They're like, hell yeah, this is awesome. And to me, they're the ones that are saying, my job is to serve my client and get them what they need. And this type of litigation, even if I do it, I don't need to. And I can spend my time helping more complex cases and helping folks that actually do need my expertise. So to me, that's the higher level attorney that isn't just trying to squeeze as much money as they can out of each person. They're saying they're looking out for the interests of their client. If they really understood our business model and understood the legal quality behind what we do. And that's what we hear a lot when we talk to lawyers of that caliber. They're like, this is amazing. And again, if they're really good immigration attorneys, they want that same systemic change that we want.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I was telling the story about how we got started, because what we believe is that the pro se caseload that we can bring, the grassroots effort, if you will, combined with the work that those really high caliber immigration attorneys do with either group cases or their own individual cases, the impact of those things working together will absolutely force the immigration office, the Department of Justice, to make changes, because we will make what's going on absolutely untenable and just force them into a corner where they're like, we have to change.
Yeah, because here you can help 100 people in a day or more and just actually flood the courts and like drown them with cases where they have no choice but to say, hey, we cannot keep up with this volume. We've actually just got to make sure there's some changes in the system just so that we're not overrun by these cases.
Exactly. So like, and I think we talked about this on a previous episode. I don't remember. I think it was Steven who was on it. Like the fact that, you know, there's folks like Brad, John, Steven, like these folks are working on this sort of complex stuff because the laws don't work on immigration. At least it doesn't work anymore today. And it's become so complex and complicated. I think generally I feel like there's an aversion, like, oh, you have the tendency to say, oh, you know, lawyers are trying to make money off of our situation, especially, you know, immigrants stuck in something. But in fact, it's the other way around. They're actually helping you. And of course, I don't want to sound naive, like, yeah, obviously everybody makes money out of this. They also need to make something out of it. But the idea is they are able to make a change in the system just by fighting through these cases. And like a very, I think, almost completely automated process is what, you know, Pro Se Pro does.
Yeah.
So which is great. Like, I think it's a really, really good thing, and it's required, because at least that way, you know, one day Congress wakes up and takes notice, oh my God, this is just so many court cases and yeah, like
100,000 cases waiting, guys. We've got like 2 judges. I think something might be wrong.
Well, you know, when you talk about the impact that we hope to have and that we are having, I do want to make one thing clear, that because this comes up in conversations a lot. It's like, well, are you inundating USCIS? And the great news is the way that the litigation works is we're really inundating the Department of Justice, because those are the lawyers that work on behalf of CIS. And so we're inundating them with these cases. And then they are in turn pressuring CIS to say, fix your processes. You're telling me this approval for, you know, XYZ form takes 30 minutes. Why is it taking them 5 years for you to get through it?
Yeah.
Figure it out. And getting the government agencies to pressure their own to say, we've got, I liked your 100,000 lawsuits. I'll get some numbers to put it in perspective of what we've done. Now we had our relaunch in May of 2023. So very, very fresh. Prior to us starting from like the year 2000 to 2020 or 2021, the average number of annual pro se immigration cases, I don't know if y'all want to guess how many were filed nationwide.
5,000 maybe in a year?
In a year.
Yeah, 5,000.
70
a year.
A year. So that was the average And since launching in May, we've helped customers, our customers have filed over 800.
Wow.
So,
wow, I was way off.
Yeah.
I thought in a year you'd probably get that much. 800, that's like almost, wow, you increase it like 10 times, more than 10 times.
It'll be more than 10 times. It's more than 10 times already by the time we've got 12 months of runway.
And remember, this is just Pro, right? Like,
this is just Pro. Yeah. So
let's assume it's like another 100 cases or something that are independent or whatever it is who don't use your service.
There's a funny thing. I was, you know, playing around with some AI tools and I don't remember what I was trying to get some data out of Gemini or something a couple of weeks ago. And I said something about Pro migration cases. And it basically said, whatever source it pulled from, it said, most people don't file these because they lose or something like that. So apparently the success rate, that's not ours. Our success rate is, it would be 100% when you look at, does somebody take action on an application?
Wow.
That's the lawsuit. That's what we do is you've applied for something. You shouldn't wait 5 years for them to say, here's the result of your application.
Got it. So from what I understood of you explaining the tool to us, you guys mainly deal with lawsuits if processing times exceed more than a certain number of days. So could you give us a little background into what all types of immigration cases you guys handle?
Yeah. So right now we have four types. We have good precedent for the legal cases from attorneys like Brad Banas and Stephen Brown and others. They've set great case law precedent that we can then go from. So U visa is a great one where folks who qualify for U visa, that means you're in the country on any status whatsoever, and you are a victim of a crime, a violent crime, you may qualify for this program. The problem is the backlog as the problem with so many different programs.
There's a backlog in this too?
Yeah. Are you surprised?
Not anymore.
Yeah. So if you apply for the U visa today, I think the projections are it'll be 20 years before you actually get the U visa.
Are you serious?
There are.
Oh my God.
Congress allows for 10,000 a year, and there are about 25 to 30,000 applicants a year. And that's been going on since 2008. So each year, it's like every other backlog, they process far less. So it's going to keep adding up.
It's really funny because there are a lot of memes on folks, you know, like going outside and driving around looking for crimes just so that they can get a visa or like a green card. So FYI, guys, there's a backlog for this too.
Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't recommend falsifying a crime.
Yeah.
I have seen a lot of news. The news likes to pick up stories of people who try to fake it. But I will say, so because that backlog was so long, CIS did take good action. They're like, we need to have, these folks need to stay in the country because they're victims of crimes and they need to be in country to be able to prosecute the criminals. Yeah. And they need to be able to work and yada, yada, yada. So there are some deferred action statuses. There's called a bona fide determination or a waitlist decision. And then there's also the work permit that comes with it. Well, those should take 45 minutes to an hour to process. So obviously they take 5 years on average.
before. That's USCIS time.
Yeah. So that's what we're not suing on the actual U visa because the law is quite ironclad there where it's like we're giving 10,000 a year.
Okay.
We're not going to be able to win a lawsuit on that, but we are able to say, but they shouldn't wait 5 years for their work permit and their deferred action status that says they're here legally.
It takes 5 years for that. That's insane. Oh my God.
And so many lawyers just, they're like, no, you just have to wait. And what's funny, a lot of lawyers are like, oh, we're seeing them come in faster now. And we're like, that's because your clients are working.
I feel this is sort of like a premium processing way for, you know, U visa EADs or something, right?
Yeah. The only difference is that this is not helping UCIS hire more contractors to come audit you at work.
So you've been able to, like, if you have metrics on that, you said this documentation takes like 5 years or something to get approvals from USCIS, but you know, using Pro, how much shorter have you brought it down by? Like, and you know, if you have some numbers around that.
So it should be 60 days. So that was actually codified. And so Congress said, hey, it should take 60 days for you to give them this deferred action.
Oh, great. Okay.
Sounds good. That's a reasonable time frame.
Yeah.
Congress passed that. They said, this is the time frame. It was written into law.
Yeah.
The average wait time, unfortunately, is over 5 years for the deferred action, not for the actual U visa. Remember, that's like 20 years now.
Oh my God.
The deferred action is over 5 years on average.
So when you say deferred action, it's sort of like an EAD, like an employment authorization document, something like that, or?
The bona fide determination is actually just kind of a letter that says, hey, you are allowed to be here. And then the EAD is, yeah, the classification of the EAD is considered a deferred action classification.
Okay.
But it's a really good one. The U visa EAD lasts for 4 years, which is one of the longer EAD permits that they issue. And it obviously can be renewed because they're going to have to renew it about 5 times if they apply now to wait for that U visa.
And the typical wait time right now is like 5 years just to get that deferred action status.
30 times more than yes. What the Congress has prescribed.
Right.
That sounds like a typical timeline for USCIS, like, you know, 5 years. Yeah, I think it's normal.
It messes with your head when you hear the timeframes and you're like, well, this person's only been waiting a year. And it's only because you're comparing them to somebody who's been waiting 4 years or 5 years. You're like, no, this person's been waiting a whole year. That's way too long. And I catch myself saying, oh, they've only been waiting for 6 months. And I'm like, no, that's wrong. And so for this one, we folks start applying with us after they've been waiting for 90 days. Essentially what we say is we're giving the agency a 30-day grace period because it's supposed to be 60 days.
Oh, okay.
So in 90 days, they apply. We've seen an average approval within 43 days of issuing the summons letters. The summons letters are the letters that we send, our customers send to the agency, to USCIS, that says, hey, you're being sued. Somebody is suing you. It's me. I'm suing you. Not me personally, but the person.
The applicant themselves. Yeah.
The applicant. Yeah. They're like, hey, I'm suing you. Here's the official notification. From the time that that's delivered, the average approval time that we see is 43 days. And our approval rate is 95% on the U visa program. 95% of those applications, the agency just approves them. There's no request for evidence. There's no whatever. It's just like, hey, we're going to either we issue a settlement and the approval comes in. But essentially, the agency recognizes we should have taken some action. And the easiest thing for us to do is what we should have done in the first place and handle this application.
So 5 years to 130 days, you've effectively, that's
4 months. Four and a half months.
Oh my God.
Yes. It's so successful that our biggest problem is that people don't believe us. You know, we're like touting our results and we have actually a lot of customers that they're very generous and they give us video testimonials and they say like, this is what happened. And we have people that are like, that's a paid actor. That's a lie. Why are you lying? Why are you, and I'm like, other than recording more of these and having more user generated like videos, I'm like, I know, but it's not fair. And I know that a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of scams and a lot of people trying to take advantage.
That's a really hard segment for people to give you guys video testimonials in the first place, right? I mean, you've just been a victim of such a crime and you're like prosecuting the government on top of that. Like, so the fact that you guys have some is like testament to the fact that, you know, they're like so grateful they can work now or move on with their lives.
Yeah. And we do see people that are like, I don't want my video online. I'm like, totally get it. But they're like, but I wanted to give you testimonial. So like, here's my written thing, or I'll give you audio and I'll give you an audio testimonial. Because okay. Yes, like you said, they're like, the results are radical and it's really fun to do. And it's great for us to hear that and to hear that feedback and just keep doing what we're doing. And the people who call us liars, like, I mean, I know where they're coming from. They're frustrated, but their lawyers are telling them, no, you have to wait. And that's what really kills me is like, they're getting bad advice from their lawyers. And I would say most times I take the perspective of, I think, most times it's well-intended that their lawyers aren't litigators. They're petition attorneys and their job is to follow processes.
And to be honest, John, in the immigration world, more often than not, anything that seems too good to be true is naturally met with so much
skepticism. Yeah,
exactly. Right. If someone tells me, hey, I can get my, something that's 5 years, I get it in 2 months. If I just use this tool already in my head, I'm like, what is this new scam that you're trying to bait me into? Right.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, exactly. And the thing, see, like, I'm trying to imagine, because like at least the first few cases that went through pro se.
Like, would have been super hard, right, Sanjay? Yeah, just think about it. The first case.
Because like I'm talking, now this sounds like a very tech product sort of way of thinking. Like I'm thinking about the customer retention, or like, you know, the word of mouth is the best marketing tool. And obviously, because once you have your first customers using this, they'll be like, this worked for me. This is just amazing. Like it cuts down 5 years to like 4 months. But those first customers, like those first people.
Friction would have been insane.
Yeah.
Because if my friend, like, for example, if I'm going through something and Sanjay's like, hey, I use this, you can use this. That's it. Because I know this is a trusted source. He's used it, right? Correct. But getting that first domino to you knock over, that's like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You've like empowered these folks, right? I mean, these are guys who've been beaten down and they're like stuck. And you've effectively empowered them and given them their lives back in sort of sense. Now they'll be able to work. They don't have to worry for the next couple of years.
Absolutely. That's a word that we use a lot internally and even externally is the empowerment, because that is one of the really cool things that just, it really gets us fired up. And yes, particularly talking about the U visa folks that, you know, they have being victims of crimes, like that is a, can be a very stripping kind of experience.
Ordeals. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And yeah, absolutely. And so giving them something where they can say, look, I myself took on the US government.
Yeah.
I filed this lawsuit. I sued the government and I won and I beat them.
And I'm not broke.
And I did it myself.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, you're not broke. You don't go broke. It's like a flat fixed fee thing.
You know, we don't tell this a ton. We do some work with some nonprofits as well, where we have some, like, you know, special programs that we offer with clients that work with some legal nonprofits too. So,
oh, nice. So would you say, like, if any nonprofits are interested, they can directly email you or something to see if, you know,
absolutely, they are
eligible?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Would love that.
And I know, like, you know, we had talked about this where you had mentioned the number of pro se cases, you know, you've just through U visas, uh-huh, you've brought it down to like 800 something in a year, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, from 70 or something. And this is in the entirety of the United States. The 70, it's not 7,000, it's not 70,000, it's literally the number 70. And I'm curious, like, so you've had 700, 800 people who sued the US government directly by themselves, pro se, predominantly, I'm assuming it's the U visa. And was there like any sort of reaction from the government side? Like, you know, you had folks call me, what is going on? Who are you guys? Yeah. Like, I'm curious about that.
That's a great question. Yeah. So we took, the national average was 70 cases. And we, in less than a year, have helped over 800 different individuals or families file their cases. Amazing. And the vast majority of the U visa ones, we can file them all over the country, and we have, but the vast majority have gone to a court in Vermont. So you could definitely say of those 800, at least 700 or more have gone to this court in Vermont.
Okay.
And nice. And so, yes, they did take notice, because okay. the court in Vermont is actually a relatively sleepy court. I mean,
suddenly 800 cases.
Yeah. And actually, the Department of Justice, you know, the U.S. attorneys, they're trying to figure out what's going on. And the judge was like, you know what, I'm going to do something, which is I'm going to call a status conference. And I'm going to call a status conference with just a handful of these individual cases, not because I necessarily want the individual litigants, the plaintiffs, you know, the folks filing their cases, not because I necessarily want them to come to this meeting, but because I want to have an official forum to talk to the Department of Justice about what's going on with these pro se okay. cases. So our customers got notices in the mail that said, hey, there's a status conference on this date. They only sent three or four of them out of, you know, the hundreds. Just again, it was just a matter of protocol. Sure. A status conference, by the way, is an unofficial, informal meeting between a judge and both sides of a case. And it's really, the hopes of that are, hey, can we figure out a settlement? Can y'all settle this without having to do anything in court? And okay. let's just figure out what's going on in this case. So he held this status conference, and I, of course, went to the court in Vermont because okay. I wanted to know what was going on. I was actually a little scared. I'm like, is this judge going to be ticked off? Because all of a sudden, you know, he would have maybe 100 cases a year total. This one of across all of his things. Now in this one specific, very niche area in which he's probably seen one or two cases, you know, his whole career. Now he's got many hundreds of them on his desk. And so I'm like, is he going to yell at me? Is he going to, he's going to yell at our customers? Like, I didn't really know. I, at the time I was conveying this, like, this is going to be great. But deep down, I was pretty scared. I was like, I don't know what he's going to do. We show up to court, and he kind of, the customers of ours that were called to the status conference, they dialed in remotely. That's a right. pretty common thing in court now. You don't have to travel for, oh, nice. For many, many court proceedings. So they dialed in, and the judge didn't expect that. He was like, oh, I'm kind of surprised you're here, but that's great. You can listen in.
Okay.
He's basically like, I'm not going to ask you any questions, but you can sit in and listen. And he basically talked to the Department of Justice, and they said some things. And he's like, well, they kept talking about pro se pro. And he's like, is anyone from Pro Se Pro here? I was like, yeah, I'm here. And he's like, all right, why don't you come on up? You know, kind of puts me in the area where the attorneys sit. Okay. And he couldn't have been more empathetic towards what we were doing and towards more smart customers and the situation they were in. And was just
amazing.
He kind of kept asking the Department of Justice why their client, the USCIS, wasn't doing this better. And at one point, he asked this great question, and I can't wait. We haven't gotten the transcript from it yet. You know, it's a public record, so we can get the transcript and get it. Because he asked them, do the people who file these lawsuits get their stuff faster? And they couldn't say, yes, absolutely. But they were like, kind of. It was like, it was the most, I mean, I hate it. It was funny, but I also, it's like, just do your job. You know, it gets you really frustrated. But the judge was amazing. He basically told the Department of Justice, you need to get your clients act together. You need to make sure that all of these pro se filers, that you're taking care of them. If you have to work with Pro Se Pro, so be it. Do what you have to do to get these things processed quickly. They shouldn't see my courtroom because they should just be what's called mooted out. You know, it's mooted out means it goes away. That's because they get what they want. And he's like, I shouldn't really be seeing these cases, because if you see a file, you should make your client get them processed.
I mean, I see his concern, right? Because if people find out that the only way to get something done faster is by suing the government, right? Then it's like Pandora's box, where you open it, everything.
Yeah.
No, like, I think there's also the other angle. Like, he's also questioning the government's ability to do their jobs. Like, hey, does somebody have to file a lawsuit to get you to do your job? He's probably questioning the government there as well. Like, what is going on with you there? You guys do not run your ship, sort of a thing. So that's awesome.
That's like really good traction.
Yeah. I mean, it was great validation from the courts.
You sort of ramped up your tool and your presence up drastically in the immigration community, right? When you forced the judge to notice what you're doing, and the judge in turn forced Department of Justice and USCIS to actually fix it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. He said, Department of Justice, do your job, get this stuff, you know, basically put pressure on your client. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do, is this death by a thousand cuts is like, a group suit is great. It can help a lot of people at once. Yeah. But by itself, it doesn't put the same level of pressure. And so if we have really good attorneys like Stephen Brown and Brad Banas bringing great group cases, and we also have this other side of these pro se individuals filing hundreds of cases, that 1-2, we really believe will affect change, and that we can force them to get processes changed. And we, you know, with the, I'm going to use this to seg, if you don't mind, to some of the other programs we offer. You know, we do H4 EAD, and I looked at the times before we recorded this podcast, and the times for the H4 EAD are pretty good. They're mostly 5 months and under. Again, I'm like, I'm sad that that's a pretty good time frame.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the same thing what you said earlier, right? Yeah.
Your perspective is so skewed when you're like, oh, it's only 5 months. It's way too long. But
and it's not just that. Like, I think there's a little bit of history around the H4 EAD thing. Is during the Trump administration, they had split that whole process of adjudicating the EAD and the H4 from the H1 itself. And so, and then the pandemic happened. And so it was pretty much chaos. Like, you had so many spouses who had to stop
working. That was such a dumb move, though. It was just the most pointless move ever. Like, just to unnecessarily create a delay in your process.
Yeah, kind of. And we've gone from that, like, which is obviously super crazy, to like 5 to 6 months, which is, again, it's like you said, John, that's not the bar, like, which we think is a good thing. It's obviously not. And you've further brought it down with a pro se version of the H4D EAD delay. So which is awesome.
Yeah. It's, you know, for the most part, that's not a product that we sell a lot of, just because it's not as big a problem. But it's out there, and it still does arise, because remember, those are averages. So the 5 months is the average. It's like a bell curve. So you've got people on either tail end.
Extremes, yeah.
You've got the extremes. But I believe that litigation was a huge impact, you know, coming out of that pandemonium that you described. The litigation efforts of mostly group cases, to be fair. We won't take credit with Pro Se, because we weren't really in business then. But the litigation efforts of a lot of the group suits helped put pressure to resolve those. We're trying to help get some of these other ones solved more quickly. So UVIS obviously is one of them. We've got the H4 EAD as a lawsuit that we offer. One of the really interesting ones that I love is the EB-5, the investor green card.
Wait, there's delays in that too?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you would think if somebody's paying $1 million, they get things fast.
Oh my God.
I would say the same thing for H1B too, though. You'd think if like really smart people were coming in to help boost companies that are growing, you'd want them in really quickly. Same thing. If people are saying, hey, take a ton of money to grow a company and create jobs, you would roll out the red carpets, which is what they do in a lot of countries.
So I thought it was like that. Yeah.
No. So there are two major steps in the EB-5 process. You first apply to the program when you make the investment. And that is, it's called a 526 is the form. I know, you know, in this world, it's all about the forms. The 526 average wait time is several years, 7 to 5 years. That gives you a conditional green card. So you're in the US, you can get advanced, you can get parole, you can travel, but you don't have your permanent green card yet. The permanent green card comes with your next form after you've had that for, after you've had it for 2 or 3 years. I think it's when you've had it for 2 years, after you've had that approval for 2 years, then you can apply for your permanent green card. That's an 829.
Okay.
The average wait time for the 829 is over 5 years. Again, this over 5 years waiting for this 829. And this is one, again, that's supposed to be within 6 months, this should be processed. Again, it's written in the code. It's like, this should take 6 months, 180 days to get this approved, but it's taking 5 years. And so that's a great one. The challenge with EB-5 is it's a really, I'll say, interesting community, the network of people that exist in the EB-5 world, because you've got a lot of different entities that see opportunity in these investors who are bringing, you know, $1 million into the country. There's a lot of hands out, and there are a lot of, therefore, conflicts of interest. And when you really examine the different players, the delays actually benefit a lot of different people other than the individual investor. And so, you know, a lot of the folks that, if they were looking out for the best interest of the individual investor, they would be saying, you should be suing the government at 180 days, whether it's with Pro Se Pro or with the lawyer, you should be suing the government because otherwise you're going to be waiting. But they don't necessarily want to say that because the most obvious conflict of interest would be a regional center that has a clause that says you don't get your investment back until you get your permanent green card, which is a practice that's not required by law, but a lot of regional centers or investment funds put that in there. So an investor—
for 15 years, you've got just a lot of cash just sitting.
Yeah, super low interest loans, essentially, very cheap capital that they've got access to. Meanwhile, the investors— that,
oh my God.
They're not always incredibly wealthy people. A lot of times they've used their entire savings or they've used, it doesn't necessarily matter where the money came from. It's rightfully theirs. And anybody who is benefiting from their delay, it's just a huge conflict of interest. And you see the industry rife with it.
How is that legal?
Well, it's, you know, there's been, if you have a Google alert for EB-5 like I do, you do see a lot of alerts for different lawsuits against bad actors.
I did recently read something. I think it was the Southern District of New York. Like they had started one of those indictments or arrested a few lawyers who did something like they made these fraudulent claims and they were using the money for putting into their own businesses and not even like...
Well, they didn't specify what the money was going to be invested in.
No, but like...
There's more subtle ones too. So we, you know, we spoke to this nonprofit that does work with the investment community for the EB-5. Like, hey, this is great. Like, we're another opportunity. This is just all we do. Our business model is aligned solely with that of the investors. And talk to the guy. He's like, this is all great, but I've got a problem. You know, we basically refer people to lawyers and the lawyers give us money. And so I can't recommend you because I have to keep money coming into the nonprofit.
Oh my God.
But I recognize what you're doing would be great for investors, but I can't recommend you, even though it's a great, you know, we are a much lower cost option. And oftentimes we're a more effective option.
This reminds me of like, there's this scene in the movie, The Big Short. I don't know if you guys have seen it, where Steve Carell's character, they go to one of the rating agencies and they're questioning, how are you guys classifying these bonds as like, you know, AAA plus or whatever, high quality bonds when it's actually really bad mortgages. And the lady says the exact same thing, you know, the banks that make the bonds, they'll go to another agency if we don't give them the rating that they want and we won't make money out of it. So like, it's exactly the same thing here.
Yeah.
And the incentives are misaligned.
No, when you think about the 21st century, right, with like how transparent everything is in all the tech, it's just mind-boggling when you know that there's such things in the government that way, that way, the American government, right? It was some third world country. I'd expect a few palms being greased or something to get stuff moved around. When I hear stuff like this, it's fascinating.
It's fast and fast. That's a nice way of saying it.
And that's the thing, right? Like you typically, I would assume like an EB-5 investor would need to work with lawyers because they have no idea the sort of paperwork that needs to be done. Because I can say like, you know, with me and Raul, we are living in the US. We've been here. We are part of the immigration system, you know, visas and paperwork. We understand it at least on some level to know what forms. But this is somebody who's probably not entered the US yet or like they're very new and they have no understanding of how it works. And so they're totally dependent on what their lawyer says to them.
No, and it's crazy because off late, and I told you about this, right? Even on LinkedIn, it's rampant, right? I see so many forms being circulated. Hey, our law firm is, you know, looking for this investor for EB-5 thing. Fill out this spreadsheet or do this, do that. And it's crazy. Now that you've shed some light on it, right? It all falls into place.
I didn't even know there was a problem like this until we are actually recording right now. Like, I had no idea.
Yeah, and the EB-5 is, for us, it's one of those areas where I think everyone wants the best deal. No one wants to feel like they overpaid for a thing. But the EB-5 folks are probably the most price insensitive of the types of people that we work with.
The ROI is so bad if it's 15 years, right?
Yeah, and paying for a lawyer, you know, a lot of people would say, I'd rather just pay for a lawyer than do it myself. And I like, for us, we always say there's two types of people that we come across. Litigation works for everything that we do. And you can find lawyers who do the type of litigation that we help with, absolutely, without a doubt. The people that like us, either they are looking for the best price or the people who like to be in control. And they've been made aware of this really, really fun, dirty secret. I'm going to tell you the dirty secret that the people who like to do this type of lawsuit. This is particularly, I would say, compelling for the EB-5 folks and for the H-1B or H-4 folks, which is the government attorneys absolutely terrified of pro se litigants. A lawyer is terrified to see a file come across his desk that's stamped pro se.
How to start the other way? Because, you know, going against someone who has no legal background, it's a sure one, right?
Yeah, the David and Goliath. Goliath is terrified.
Yeah.
Goliath is shaking in his boots. And
you're the slingshot.
Yeah, that's right. Pro Se Pros were giving you the slingshot and the rock, and you're flinging it yourself. But the thing is, when a lawyer is facing off against a lawyer, there are sets of rules and ethics and codes that they must follow. This is, you know, what you learn in law school, what you have to pass on the bar and yada, yada, things you swear into. When you file a lawsuit pro se, there's certain rules and decorum of court that you have to follow, but you're not bound by all the legal ethics that a lawyer is bound by. You're a wild card and you're going to be able to do what a lot of, I'm not going to say you can do whatever you want. You still have to follow the rules of court in terms of the way that you file things and the ways that you address court and make motions, but you don't have to tiptoe around things that you want to say. A lawyer working for the government, on the other hand, he has to be worried about if he's doing something like giving you legal advice because you're not a lawyer.
Oh, like that. Okay.
He has to be very careful. And he might say, oh, this person, I'm trying to come to an agreement with them. They don't understand what I'm saying. I'd love to tell them this is what you should do for their own sake, but I can't even do that. Okay. Because that would be crossing a line. So they're terrified, A, because having any conversation with a pro se person has so many landmines that they could trip up and accidentally say something that could get them in trouble later. So they definitely don't want to get on the phones with somebody who's pro se. They like to have the emails because they can think about their words very carefully.
Damn, I would have never thought of that.
Right? Yeah. It's so I'm like thinking, this is like cowboy versus like, hey, I'm going pro se and you're standing in front of the judge and the judge is pissed off because like, do you even know what you're talking about sort of thing? And then the case is dismissed. That's it. You're done. You know,
but
it seems like it's the exact opposite.
Yeah. And in most cases, the judges do give a lot of grace and a long leash to a pro se because they understand this person doesn't have legal training. And especially when it's a sympathetic, when it's not like, you know, you're a horrible person, like you're here because you're not even asking for money. You're saying, I just want them to process my application. That's it. Like, it's a very sympathetic.
I know when you put it like that, make the whole lawsuit so sad, right?
Can that guy take 30 minutes and go through my application? That's all I want, you know?
No, but that's awesome, right? Like, I love that you've constructed and built something like that. It's so empowering to people. Like,
yeah.
Because let me put it this way. You know, both of us, Rahul and I, we are from India. And what we see, like typically when dealing with the government office back home, if something's stuck, like some paperwork, yeah, it's stuck, man. Come whenever it's ready. When is it ready? We don't know. Just come in every day and check. And
if
then
you sue them, it'll probably take longer.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy.
I mean, that, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about this country and about our legal system is that this exists. And to speak to that, because we hear that a lot, like, is the government going to get mad at me? Like, aren't they going to retaliate?
Yeah.
And that would go for any litigation, whether it was pro se or with a lawyer. And the short answer is no. Like, first of all, you're talking to the Department of Justice, not the USCIS. They're going to take it to the USCIS. But at the end of the day, it's going to go so far down the line to the person who's actually doing the work has no idea that you filed a lawsuit, probably. But second of all, most of the people that are doing the work in the government agencies, they're not bad people. They're stuck in a bad process. They're just doing their jobs.
Yep.
The problem is the job has been designed very poorly. And the process is broken. And so it's not necessarily the people, they're not going to get mad at you. And the fact of the matter is retaliation is illegal. It is very easy to demonstrate. In these cases, it would be very easy to demonstrate it. And it's just highly illegal.
Maybe you could add that as a program, John. Lawsuits against retaliation.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not. Hopefully there's no need for it. It's gone quite well. So yeah.
So wait, you said there was one more program that you guys offered,
there's one more thing. It's really about people who like to be in control and like don't want to wait on answers. They don't want to, you know, when a lawyer has a group case with 100 people, you know, they're not necessarily taking your phone calls all the time. And what's beautiful about the pro se is if you want to know what's going on, you have a direct line to the government attorney who's handling your case. It's you and that person. And if they're not answering, you can call them 5, 10, 20 times a day if you want. Whereas a lawyer, if I'm a lawyer and I'm got a group case against the government, well, I probably bring group cases fairly regularly, or I sue the government regularly. I have a relationship with those lawyers in the government. I work with them on a regular basis. I may or may not like them personally. It doesn't really matter. Either way, I have to maintain a good, cordial working relationship with them. I am not going to call them 20 times a day. And so if they're not getting back to me, I'm going to space it out. And I also have other cases. You as a pro se person, the only case you care about is yours. Yeah. And so you're going to be able to put your finger on the pulse. And that's also one of the things, you know, our tech-enabled kind of thing. We give a lot of visibility. We have some visibility that even lawyers don't have into what's going on in someone's case. So, you know, there's a lot of good kind of tracking and stuff within the Pro Se Pro app that our customers are using to stay on top of what's going on and maintain that control and keep their foot on the gas. Okay. In some cases, the Pro Se cases are going to go faster than the group cases because it's much faster to process one person than 100 people in a group case. And I have nothing against group cases. Like, just there's different flavors.
Yeah, each to their own, right? Like, whatever works. But the idea is, like, you've built this path where, you know, like you said, the individual has control where you can do this yourself. Like, let's say I don't want to badmouth lawyers, but like, let's say you don't have a great lawyer who's not comfortable pushing your case as much. You know, they're a bit more conservative. Like, hey, we don't want to mess with the government or whatever. And you're like, hey, this is problematic for me. I need to get a solution. Mm-hmm. Let me just do this myself. And it works great that way.
Yeah.
So you've got the U visas, you've got H4 EADs, and you've got the EB5s. Are there any other visa categories that you do provide as well other than these?
Yeah, the last one that we've got active right now is adjustment of status, advanced parole.
Okay.
So anyone who's in that 100-year backlog that is going to be waiting for a while, if you want to go home and see a loved one, go to a wedding, do whatever. Yeah. Again, I pulled up the timeline. So if you're in Texas, the wait time is 14 months. So, you know, I don't know how much notice you typically get if somebody gets sick or whatever, you're not going to have that long.
Just hold on for 14 months. I'll be right there.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's only good for 12 months once you get the advanced parole.
Oh.
And so.
Oh, I thought it was once you get it, you get it.
Oh, no.
So you have to keep renewing it.
Oh, my God. Are you serious? Yeah. I didn't know that.
I might be misspeaking. They might have extended it to two. Some of them are 2 years, and the adjustment of status might have been extended to 2 years somewhat recently. So if I misspeak, I'm sure a listener will correct me. I'll do the research and correct myself before this drops so you can issue that. But yeah, it's either 1 or 2 years. It's not indefinite.
Wow.
Because that's, again, if I understand correctly, a bridge until you get your green card.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So that's what we've got active. I'd love to tell you we've got one kind of in the hopper. Actually, we got two that are coming somewhat soon. One is actually advanced parole for U visa, which right now doesn't exist. So the lawsuit is actually to get it to exist. If you're waiting on your U visa, you're 20 years or waiting, you cannot leave.
when we spoke about the U visas, that was just for work authorization, was it?
Basically, yeah.
So the parole is not part of that.
You can get parole if you're out of the country to come in the country and then get your work authorization. But
okay,
it's a little bit convoluted, but
yeah,
basically you're stuck here. I'll be really careful about speaking to this one because it's, I have many, many phone calls a week about this because people are so desperate for it because it hasn't, they've never had the option. We're not offering it right now because okay. There isn't good case precedent for it. And so okay. We're waiting for some attorneys. Again, you know, I mentioned Brad Banas and Stephen Brown. I know Brad has some outstanding suits here. We're waiting for his good case law with some of his group suits to be set and have really good case precedent set so that okay. We can offer the service pro se. What we'd never do is go out with pro se and have a pro se person file something that hasn't been proven. If you see a service listed on our website, it means it's proven and that the settlement rate is super high that you won't expect to see a courtroom. Because gotcha. The fact of the matter is, if we did that, we would be putting in jeopardy the future of that program. And this is where the legal strategy is really important.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Yeah, because essentially, if a pro se person filed a case by themselves, and this is maybe even a like caution to anybody who's like, oh, maybe I'll just file pro se by myself for something that is brand new and I don't necessarily know how to draft a good complaint or whatever. If you were to do that, you could actually be hurting the chances for everyone in the future. Because if you lost that case and it was not just summarily dismissed, but it was just like, this is, nope, this is wrong. All of a sudden, you've got case law that's precedent setting for future ones. So you're making it harder for any lawyer or pro se to win a future case. And so when we do our cases, it's because they're well proven, they're validated, there's good, solid, solid foundation and precedent for them. And that's why we know when you file a suit, it's going to get settled because the government doesn't have any good arguments against it.
So you guys are like, need to carefully strategize and plan what kind of services you offer, right? Because right. One wrong step and then there's probably an entire section of immigrants that's impacted by it. That's pretty crazy to know.
And no, see, I'll take the other side of this. I am actually very happy, like, you know, folks like John or like Brad or Stephen or all these litigators. For example, there's, like John's explained now, there's no advance parole for a U visa. And there's probably litigation that might come up soon where they might offer a path.
Yeah.
You are actually seeing lawyers who are building case law to make the immigration system better because Congress cannot do a decent enough job of fixing this, right?
Right. For example, if John could like jump the gun, like he's having a for-profit business at the end of the day, right? He could just offer all of these in one shot, right? Without actually worrying about the fact that, hey, is it going to actually impact a bunch of people who he's probably never going to meet?
Yeah.
So the fact that they're actually taking it so slow, like making sure that testing the waters before actually, it's pretty cool. And I think power to you for that, John. Yeah, there is a lot of money in the immigration game. I mean, it is a problem.
You're doing a better job than Congress. Like, that's what I'd say. Because everyone seems to love, scream all angles about immigration, but nobody does a thing in Congress. Like, so you're a lot more methodical, like making sure the actions that you take, you know, your second or third order consequences, like how it matters, you take that into consideration, which is great.
Absolutely. Yeah, so thanks for like making sure that what you're doing is only for the betterment and not the flip side.
Yeah. Well, thanks for comparing me to Congress because that the bar's so low. I'm doing great. Yeah.
How much do these things cost, by the way? I'm just curious. Like, let's say I want to file a lawsuit against an excessive delay. How much would something like this cost me?
It depends on the service. Our range, the low end is the U visa that starts at $1,497 up to $2,097 for the adjustment of status advanced parole.
Okay.
Although I will say we offer coupon codes, discounts quite frequently. If you subscribe
and
to
it's
us.
It's a flat fee?
Flat fee.
Oh, wow.
One fee includes the principal plaintiff and all derivatives. So, all that's a family
wow.
fee.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
That's a bang awesome. For your buck.
Yeah.
So the single people may be feeling like they're getting as good a deal, but you know we want to keep families together as much as we can. So we felt like that was the best, fairest way to do it.
You know what you should do, John? You should somehow figure out a way to get a lawsuit to reduce sperm delays. You know, I think the entire Indian community in US will be huge providence of pro se pro.
Man, Rahul, I guess I'll have to nudge you. Thanks for that segue. I said we had two cases on the line. So the advanced parole for U visa is where we're waiting on. And the perm is our number two. And that one, is much more imminent in terms of us expecting to see results. So yeah, I'm glad you said that. We are kind of working closely with Stephen Brown and Brad Banas. They are bringing some group suits right now and suing the Department of Labor because they're the institution in this case that is really delaying things. And the prognosis looks quite positive that this lawsuit will be highly effective. And I don't have a timeline for when we're going to fire ours up, but as soon as that good, solid foundation precedent is set, yep, you can expect to see us offering a lot of that.
The floodgates are going to open, John. I'm telling you, the floodgates are going to open. And uh-huh, you guys will be like, I hope the servers can keep up with so many people.
Yeah, and I want to provide some context to our listeners here because the perm process is, you know, one step before getting your I-140. And that's typically when, at least most for the Indian national backlog folks, like that's the start, yeah, to getting a priority date. And also it gives you option to extend your H-1B visa beyond 6 years. And I think if I'm not mistaken, Congress or somewhere in some DOL document had specified that it's supposed to be done in 45 to 60 days. Rahul, can you guess how many days it takes right now?
I don't need to guess. I've been following it. It takes 13 months.
Yeah, it's like 400 days or something right now. It's beyond crazy.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. A lot of folks are like desperately looking at other options. You know, that's why the EB2 NIW is starting to become very popular. But then not everybody is qualified. And some people are just want like regular jobs. And they just want to like stick around. And it's just become crazy. So, yeah.
Like, unless you're extraordinary, you don't cut it in US immigration. You know, it's like your regular normal person just wants to wake up, go to work, check out and go have a drink. Nope.
Well, and just another number. So it takes 14 months to process one. It only takes the agency about 10 minutes to do each application. And that's what's really painful about it is like, what's happening? Why? There's no good answer as to why.
You know, I used to feel bad about this before, John, but after hearing that it takes 5 years to give someone who's been a victim of a crime to be allowed to work, I feel I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I don't have it as bad, right?
Yeah.
But again, your perspective gets all messed up when you talk about these long timeframes and these irrational, unreasonable delays. And that's, you know, that's the word that we always throw around is unreasonable because that's truly at the foundation of every lawsuit that we do is this is unreasonable, no matter how you cut it.
So you're starting to like flood the court system with these pro se cases now, you know, with all your options. I'm assuming once the sperm thing starts, you're probably, so there's going to be an equivalent of the Vermont scene that you described, but in this case, it's with the Department of Labor. Like, have you like heard of any rumblings where USCIS, like the director is pissed off at pro se pro? Like,
there's like a dartboard with like John and Brad's faces in their lunch.
You know, we learned recently through the grapevine, the director of USCIS, Urja Du, she is familiar with us and the work that we're doing. So,
wow, validation, John.
Yeah. So I'm sure she's not a fan. I don't know if she has a dartboard with me on it yet, but yeah, she's aware of the work we're doing. And the Department of Justice does have us on the radar and we're not an uncommon topic of discussion. So yeah, we're there. And I can't remember if I said this earlier, but I just want to reiterate one of the things that, you know, when we think about our legal strategy and how, you know, we want to make sure we are thinking of the second and third order impact of the things that we're having. What we want to do is fix a process. The way we're going about it is inundating not the agency that's handling the applications. We're inundating the Department of Justice. We're inundating those lawyers with work, so that they will put pressure on their other governmental agencies to do their jobs better. And so in that way, you know, for the most part, at least from no direct way, we're not slowing down application times. We're not inundating USCIS with any new applications. It's the same. We're saying, take the applications you've got and do your job. So we're putting pressure on them through their colleagues at a different government agency. And so that's kind of the beauty of the strategy here is getting hundreds of people to pressure one agency that's not actually doing the work to then pressure the agency that has to do the work so that they're that way we're preserving, we're not making things take any longer, and hopefully we're fixing this problem until we find a new one and we go fix that one.
You're an immigration advocate in your own way, John.
There's this quote by John Lewis about, you know, getting into good trouble. That's how I see it. Like, you're doing good trouble. You're making the right sort of trouble to help and improve things. Yeah. And like, it's very admirable, I gotta say, because end of the day, what folks who are stuck in the immigration system in the US, I think USA has mentioned like there's like 10 million applications or something this year. It's still, what, probably 3% or 5% of the US population. Even though it's such a large number, it's still not big enough for folks to see what sort of issues are there. And like the fact that, you know, how problematic it is, and the fact that, you know, you're doing such great work around it, it's really nice.
And to top it off, John and the team at ProSave actually got something for all the podcast listeners. I'm going to let John speak about what he's got.
Yeah, absolutely. We would love to offer a discount code to every one of your listeners. So anyone who listens to this episode, I'll kind of issue it at least for 12 months. I don't know how long it will go, but Area 51 for $150 off. So the code Area 51, all caps, and we'll take $150 off your purchase of our services.
That's very kind of you, John. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And I just want to say, I mean, it's talking to you is not just apart from the great work that you've been doing. It's very inspirational and heartwarming to see two things. Like, one, the fact that you've actually being very mindful of the progress that you're making. And I said this before, and I'm just going to iterate it again. So, and this is a great tool. And I only see so many avenues for you guys to expand into that can actually help a lot of immigrants who are facing problems here. So thanks for that. And again, thanks for being extremely judicious with the power that you have and for making steps that doesn't actually affect us the wrong way. And second, it's very inspirational to see an entrepreneur who is actually building such an amazing tool without having a background in immigration law, right? Again, a lot of times we kind of hold ourselves back thinking that, hey, you know, I've got this great idea, but I really don't know how to jump into it because it's not my background. And you're like out there breaking all these barriers and stereotypes. And so kudos to you, man. And thanks for everything that you do for the immigrant community. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, whatever gratitude you send my way, I absolutely feel indebted to both of you for the work that you're doing through this podcast. And even broader than that, I am so grateful for the community of listeners that you have. I'm grateful for immigrants. I mean, I'm an advocate because of my experience living abroad, but also because, you know, the data supports the value that immigration brings. Even from a completely objective standpoint of someone who just lives in America, I should say, well, selfishly, if I want our standard of living to be higher, I should be an advocate for immigration. Like, it's, the data is very clear on that. So thank you for, despite all of these things, for coming here, investing in our country, making our country a better place. And I'm thankful for you. And I'm sorry for the challenges that you have to go through. And I hope to make the process better for you and for others that come after. But thank you. Truly. And thank you to everyone who's listening. I appreciate what you're going through. And look forward to helping you.
Sweet. Okay. I didn't expect so many compliments about us because we are usually complaining about US.
No, thanks for saying that. It means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Usually it's always go back to your country. For once, it's nice to hear saying thanks for coming. You know? Yeah, so thank you.
Absolutely.
Yep. Wow.
I know, right? It's so refreshing to have such a nuanced immigration conversation where it's just not your everyday stuff that you hear, right? Your EB1 visas or your O1 visas or stay in the backlog for 100 years. It's just so refreshing to talk about the immigration system and actually bundle in like cool tech behind it.
Well, I'll say like I'm actually humbled because I used to think like because we are so involved in this. I was like, we know everything about this whole stuff.
But I know.
A whole new world in itself, like we had no idea about.
Wow, I swear. It's so, I don't know, I was just made me very happy this episode. There's so much more out there and I don't know, we'll keep searching for cool topics like this and we'll bring it on the podcast and share it with you. If you're someone who's stuck in these four categories that John said, reach out to ProSave Pro Team. You can talk to them. Now you probably know that there's actually a lot of folks who've already used their services and they're getting good traction. Use the discount code that they've been kind enough to give. It's already pretty affordable, I would say, compared to what going through a regular attorney would cost. So thanks to John and the team for coming. And we can hope to continue bringing you content like this. Do us a favor, you know, shoot us a note if you like what we're doing.
Yep.
Leave us a review and a rating on the platform that you guys use to listen to our episodes, if it's Spotify or Apple. These things go a long way for us. And it's always, you know, encouraging and reassuring to know that you guys are actually resonating with what we're putting out.
Yep. And yeah, and please send us a note, like, even if you don't like us, you know, tell us what you want to hear, because because we love the fact that you take time out of your day to listen to, you know, what we put out. And so we absolutely value your feedback. And like Rahul said, if you do enjoy it, please leave us a review. Please share it with your friends and family who you think might find it useful, especially with this episode. Like, you know, if you're stuck in one of these super crazy delays, you can make use of ProSay Pro services and actually get a result very fast.
Yep. And also, for the first time, I just want to say a huge shout out and thank you to one of our listeners, Reshma. She's been very consistently dropping comments on our episodes. If you check out Spotify, you'll see that the last two episodes, she's actually taken the time out to pen a message to let us know what she's thought of the episode. It really means a lot to us. So thank you for doing that, Reshma.
Thank you, Reshma.
Yeah, we hope to hear from a lot of you folks on what you guys think of our episodes.
Yep, absolutely. And so that's pretty much all we have for today. We've got a lot of interesting content coming up in the pipeline. You'll hear about it pretty soon. Until then, hope everyone has a safe day or night or whatever time of the day you're listening to, and have a great week ahead.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in, guys. See you in the next episode.